From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Dan Miller of the Heartland Institute. And our program coming to you from our new home at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side. This, the last broadcast of 2008. We will not be taking any telephone calls this evening because we are recorded, but we hope that you'll be able to stick with us for the full broadcast this evening as we look back on 2008. And it was a year filled with many, many surprises and, to some extent, even political euphoria at some point during the campaign, certainly if you were a Democrat. And so we want you to follow along and maybe have your own discussions as this program moves forward. And maybe at the conclusion of the broadcast, it will be fodder for your conversations over the holidays about the important events of the year past.
Or you can talk about religion.
Or we can talk about
politics.
Well, religion and politics.
Make it a happy event.
It is a religious season to some, and they can certainly do that. Dan Miller, since you butted in, we're going to
I take it back.
We're going to start with you, publisher of the Heartland Institute. When you look at the big, let's focus on winners first. Who were the big winners of the year in your view?
No question, it was the organization team behind Barack Obama. The way that team came together, the way it was strategized using new media, Web 2.0 stuff, it really changed the way politics are going to be held. Fundraising, being elected, effectiveness.
Dan Proft is our Republican. Can you acknowledge that the Republicans or the Democrats may be the big winners politically this year?
I mean, it's hard not to concede that point with not just Obama's election, but certainly increasing the majorities in the House and Senate. I mean, they have a stranglehold on power right now.
Dan Johnson Weinberger is our Democrat. You're not going to deny anything that's been said thus far.
It's great to agree fully with Dan Proft.
Right.
Let's go below the surface. Who are some of the other big winners of the year?
Well, I think the Democratic Party is the big winner. I think this year marks the end of the Reagan Revolution, and it may mark the beginning of the Obama era of good feelings. But I think we've shifted to a center-left nation. And I think the Democratic Party and the substance of the policies that it represents is the big winner this year.
Why do you think it's now a center-left nation?
Well, because we've got 57, 58 senators. We've got 60, 70 members of the House. We've got a president who got more than a majority of the popular vote. You know, that's how you define where the populace is.
And, it shifted from where to left-center?
Center-right to center-left.
Oh, man.
Dan Proft, do you agree with that?
No, I mean, I don't think that, you know, everybody who wins always wants to predict or wants to say it's a signal of a realignment, and it really isn't. I think the country is still a center-right country. I think that there were a lot of concerns, a lot of fear that led to the election of Obama, particularly economic fears and concerns, and so I think it's dangerous to over-extrapolate from this one isolated election.
Notwithstanding your description of the brilliant campaign that was waged by David Axelrod and several others, would you acknowledge, though, that brilliance was certainly radiated after the economic collapse at One Wall Street? And had we not had that, would we still be talking, in your view, in your opinion, about an Obama victory?
I think so, Bruce, because of the way that the team, the Obama team, organized people at the grassroots. Look at the caucus victories that Barack won. That's what put him in the lead, and that is just entirely due to great organization.
At the beginning of the year, if we look back and looked at our broadcast of a year ago, we would have been talking about the likelihood of a Hillary sweep, being thrust into the Democratic nomination. We would have been talking about the emergence of Rudy Giuliani as as the Republican nominee. In your view, why did so many people miss the boat on Hillary and Rudy Giuliani, Dan Proft?
Well, I mean, on Rudy Giuliani, I think Giuliani never got out of his own way. I mean, Giuliani and Mitt Romney spent the primary season arguing about their respective records, one as chief executive of New York City and the other as chief executive of Massachusetts, and they never got to, oh, by the way, here's why I'm running for president, here's my vision for where the country needs to go. And I think that's why they never really kind of got out of the starting blocks, or certainly in Mitt Romney's case, he kind of maxed out very early. And neither of them seized the opportunity to be the kind of anti-McCain candidate, whereas Obama seized that opportunity to prey on people's fears about the electability of Hillary Clinton.
Dan Johnson-Weinberger.
I think it was more about her vote for authorizing the war. And I think conventional wisdom underappreciated the sentiment that Iraq was a mistake, and that a Democrat that supported President Bush's mistake to invade and occupy Iraq, that's not somebody that the Democratic electorate wanted leading the party.
So had she rejected that vote and turned her back on that vote, the result would have been different?
I think if she had not voted for the war, that we'd be talking about President Clinton.
All right. Now that she is the Secretary of State designate,
yeah,
because she stood fast on her initial vote, what signal does that send to the rest of the world about what type of Secretary of State she will be and what type of partner she will be with Barack Obama?
You know, I guess I don't put a lot of faith, at least since we don't have an Obama administration yet, that there's strong signals being sent that, you know, the cabinet secretaries are going to be running wild. I do believe that the president sets the policy. I think President Bush did that very well. I imagine President Obama is going to replicate President Bush's success at really leading policies and telling cabinet secretaries the way to go. And I think it's going to be similar. So I think she's going to be a competent manager and very smart, but I don't think she's going to go her own way.
Before I ask for your opinion on who the biggest losers of the year are, I would like to nominate a candidate, and that is former President Bill Clinton, that he comes off this year as a loser. Dan Miller.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Bruce. I think that's right. I want to mention one other winner, though, Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana. He came that close to being a vice presidential candidate, and I think he would have changed a lot of the dynamics of the election. Biggest loser, I think, was Sarah Palin. I know you want to get into her as a separate thing, but the reason I think she's a loser, although I have tremendous admiration and hope she does play a more prominent role going forward, but a loser, yeah, she got caught up in a very miserably run campaign and was just, you know, pilloried and put through the meat grinder.
Do you agree that she was a loser of the year? Were you one of the big losers?
I think O.J. Simpson was the loser.
Yeah, right.
Where would you put Bill Clinton?
You know, I think
ahead or behind O.J.?
Well, I would put him ahead of O.J. only in not being as big a loser, number one, because he still has his freedom, and number two, because I think that Hillary's selection as Secretary of State gets him back in the game. So I would have said with what happened to her campaign and his role really in the beginning of the end for her campaign in South Carolina, I would have agreed with you, but now that she and by extension he are back in the fold, you know, there's always time to reinvent himself yet again.
Had he been muzzled, would the results have been different? If Bill Clinton never uttered a word in this campaign, would Hillary have won the nomination?
It would have helped Hillary's chances. I think he was a net negative for the Clinton campaign and thus a net positive for us.
We have to pause. Three Dans and Bruce Dumont all joining you tonight on this special year-end edition of Beyond the Beltway from Chicago. Thanks for being with us tonight.
You.
Rocky Mosel with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice, now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
Jillian Miller, poet, laments her sinus pressure and congestion.
This stuffiness comes and stays. Weekdays, workdays, sinus pressure haze. Gone is my patience for completing a sentence or listening to friends. To them, I make amends.
Everything seems harder when your sinuses are blocked. New Sudafed PE Day and Night Dual Pack gives you maximum strength relief of sinus pressure and congestion, day and night.
Oh, this grief has found Sudafed PE relief.
Sudafed PE Day and Night. Unblock your head. Use only as directed.
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Worcester, Mass., you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We have talked a lot about Barack Obama and what was happening in the Democratic primary as one of the big stories, because Barack Obama was able to really create quite a groundswell of support all over the country, knocking off Hillary Clinton. We briefly talked about Rudy Giuliani, but I want to spend a few moments talking about John McCain and asking if there's any way, as you look back on this campaign, that John McCain could have won it, Dan Proft.
Well, you know, it's really a hard call. I think with what happened in the last 6 weeks with the economy and the the crashing and burning across various sectors, I think it made it very difficult. Although it's really hard to predict, because John McCain handled that as badly as it could be handled. I mean, here was somebody who just did not have a message, did not have a vision, did not have an articulable kind of set of first principles by which he was petitioning to govern in the campaign, and so was unable to distinguish himself from Barack Obama, and was unable to explain to the American people why or how Barack Obama's policies were just rehashed Jimmy Carter.
Dan Miller said that Sarah Palin was one of the big losers of the year. Was she a plus or minus to that ticket?
You know, I still think she was a plus. I think, again, I mean, I think Dan said it well when, some of the negativity was not of her own doing. It's the fault of a poorly run campaign. Because remember, what people forget is that right out of the convention after her nomination, McCain was up. Mm-hmm. And she did excite the base in a way that McCain would have never excited the base to turn out. So whether she ends up being a loser or a winner from this experience, I think that story has yet to be written, and it probably starts with her winning re-election as governor in 2010.
Dan Johnson Weinberger, at any point in the campaign, were you worried that the selection of Sarah Palin was a stroke of political genius that maybe was going to get John McCain to the White House?
Well, that first week, you know, when the country was fascinated with her and the Republicans broke that glass ceiling, which was admirable, I think, there was a little bit of fear of the unknown, because nobody really knew anything about her, except for social conservatives that, liked her a lot.
Right.
But I think, I think she was a real drag on the McCain ticket, because his core message was, I'm an independent, I'm a maverick. And by exciting the base, that's another way of saying, I'm pandering to the right wing of my party. And it worked in the sense of exciting the base, but it didn't work in the sense that all the independents said, well, if you're pandering to the right wing, that's not the McCain maverick that I want to vote for.
Dan, did she do herself in, or did the news media do her in?
She did herself in this sense, Bruce. She allowed herself to be put under the sway of the team that was running that campaign. When the media got on her, they just savaged her. They feared her. And the ones who were worst in treating her were the David Brooks and Kathleen Parkers and that bunch of neoconservatives, the neos. And those are the people who never even talked to her. They never interviewed her. But, boy, they feared her in so many ways.
Does she represent the future of the Republican Party at this moment in time?
Well, potentially. I mean, I think folks like her do represent the future. I don't know about her specifically. I think she has more to prove up. And like I said, I think it starts with winning her re-election as governor, and then we'll see where she goes. Dan mentioned Bobby Jindal. There are other young governors, youngish governors, Mark Sanford in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other people that are on the scene. It's not just Sarah Palin or bust for the Republican Party, but she could be part of what the party looks like in coming elections. Yeah, she will be.
And talking about the big losers of the year, I think there isn't any candidate probably in recent memory that had more of a buildup and less of a bigger misstep than Fred Thompson.
Bum, bum.
Oh,
right. Here's a guy, maybe the Messiah is coming.
Yeah.
And well, I haven't. He was like the worst of the worst.
Bum, bum.
Yeah. Right. I tell you, well, the thing about the, here's the
Your
thing.
Your day is going to come,
This
is going to make it
too right. It's very dangerous to gloat. Right. The thing with Fred Thompson, I think he had a buildup in part because of Fred Thompson, and here's a guy who can speak, and he's on the, you know, silver screen and the small screen, and so he's media savvy. But I think what it really was, remember at that point, McCain was still the perceived front runner. So what it really was is, okay, here's the conservative who can beat McCain and can take us to the White House. And there was always that opportunity for an anti-McCain, the anti-McCain candidate to emerge, and that candidate did emerge. His name was Mike Huckabee. So there was that opportunity that Fred did not take, but
here's
that was the opportunity was there.
Was Fred Thompson a ringer in the race? Didn't he drive the stake in the heart of Mike Huckabee in South Carolina? Because had Huckabee won South Carolina, and there were polls suggesting that he was coming on fast, McCain would have lost the nomination.
Potentially, but I mean, are you asking if this was McCain's brilliant strategy? Because I think at that time McCain,
might have been.
I think at that time McCain had like 1.5 staffers. So,
so it
like
could
he
just
had
be two guys in a room coming up with this idea.
Exactly.
But again,
it may have been just he and Fred, maybe.
No, but because the campaign was run so miserably, and all that Fred Thompson did when he was in South Carolina was hammer Mike Huckabee.
Right.
He drove him. He drove the stake through the campaign.
A lot of people were hammering Mike Huckabee, though. Mitt Romney was hammering. I mean, that kind of they were all nobody really liked Mitt Romney. Nobody really liked Mike Huckabee. So they were kind of all, kind of carving each other up while McCain and Giuliani sort of stayed out of the fray.
And the money people, the money establishment in the Republican Party never would have supported Huckabee. He was too much of a populist for the money establishment of the party. And so I think they were freaked out by his rise. I think
you said in the beginning of the program, Dan, that you don't think that we're really in a realignment period, and maybe there's just, you know, an overdose of euphoria on the part of the Democrats. What is the climate in the country as you see it now, from your position as a young progressive, lobbyist in the state of Illinois?
Yeah, I've never seen more people my age in their 30s and younger identify as Democrats. You know, for me, you know, I was a third party guy 8 years ago. The Democrats have sort of stayed, seemed sort of establishment, you know, didn't have a lot of energy or enthusiasm from my perspective. But, you know, my feeling now is that the Democratic Party feels like a governing coalition, feels like the modern party, and feels like the inclusive, growth-oriented party. So I think the
future... What specifically is it about what Obama has said or done, or what he has done since he's been, you know, elected? I mean, is it Hillary Clinton? Is it Bill Richardson? Is it Rahm Emanuel? What's the new thing there that the 30-year-olds are going to get excited about?
Well, I mean, frankly, I don't think there's been a whole lot since he got elected. I mean, you know, there isn't an Obama administration yet. And the cabinet appointments, you know, they don't really jazz me up. I don't know that they really jazz anybody up. It's really sort of picking your middle or upper management team. And so I think the rubber's going to hit the road come, you know, January 20th in the first 3 or 6 months as we finally have an energy policy. You know, we start to turn the economy around, start getting a health care policy that insures everybody. I think that's one thing a lot of young people like. You know, a lot of young people are uninsured.
Yeah, and I have said on this program that I think Barack Obama is going to surprise a lot of people because he is a pragmatist. He is a centrist. He's not going to govern from the far left. Do you agree with that?
Bruce. I did. You mentioned that quite some time ago, and I sort of put that into my hard drive, and you're absolutely right. The only part where it doesn't work...
You put everything I say into your hard
not
drive?
Not everything. Everything? Are you
I
kidding?
So.
The one that it doesn't work on, Bruce, is the environment and energy. He has named an ultra-green, ultra-left, alarmist team over there. And, Dan, once your 30-year-olds get a gander at how much that's going to cost, a carbon tax or cap-and-trade or ratcheting down the economy to 1990 levels so that we can meet some preposterous Kyoto Protocol that nobody else in the world is doing. Once they say how much that's going to cost, it'll all go for granted.
Wait a second. Here, the other thing, though, too, is about, you know, you talk about his cabinet. This is your upper executive management. Wait a second. Personnel is policy. Where's all the system change guys who are going to, you know, storm the castle, change politics and government as we know it? And to your question, Bruce, the idea that he rhetorically is a pragmatist. Substantively, when you're talking about, and he's talking about it, and so is Ted Kennedy vociferously, talking about nationalizing 16-17% of the economy, to me that's not governing from the center.
Well,
when you're talking about New Deal redux, that's not governing from the center.
What talking about new faces, one of the other names, you know, we've been talking in Illinois about who will be the senator to replace Barack Obama and who will make that choice. And we'll talk about Governor Blagojevich of Illinois in a few moments. But what about the emergence of Caroline Kennedy as a senator in waiting? Is that what signal does that send to 30-year-olds?
I think here's our problem. Our problem is that the 17th Amendment, which allowed direct election to U.S. senators, wasn't followed with a federal statute that requires a special election for any vacancy. You know, there's never been a member of the U.S. House that's been appointed in the history of the Republic. You know, that's, you know, I think that's pretty compelling. I think it ought to be that way for the U.S. Senate, too. If it was up to me, every vacancy for every office, anytime there's a vacancy, you fill it with a special election. And I think the idea that somebody who happens to be a niece of, you know, a revered senator on my party, you know, is a front runner, I think that's preposterous.
I'm holding on for Fran Drescher. I hope Fran Drescher gets the appointment. because let's make this as preposterous as it deserves to be made. Let's demonstrate the absurdity by being absurd. Al Franken, Fran Drescher, who cares? This is what P.J. O'Rourke said politics was, which is show business for ugly people. So get her in there. Get Al Franken in there. You know,
but if I could respond to Dan's point earlier on global warming, you know, I think that's part of the reason why the Democratic Party feels like the more modern party is that I think the number of people that think global warming is a myth, you know, Dan, I'd count you as one of them. To be fair, I assume that's your position, or that it's not
skeptical,
right? That, well, in any event, you know, I think
we are not allowed to question these things,
right,
Dan.
You know, data is data, science is science, and I think the Republican Party looks like it's the faith-based party instead of the science-based party, and I don't think voters like that.
Dan Miller.
I don't know where to begin with that, except that the weather is colder now than it's been before. It's not getting warmer, and there is no evidence that man has caused the accumulation of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
We have to pause. Thanks for joining us. This is a recorded edition, year-end in review for Beyond the Beltway, the great year 2008. It's behind us, and we'll be looking ahead as well as a little bit further behind when we come back from Chicago.
Believe me, I'm a guy who likes to get his money's worth. That's why I'm gaga over Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. I get my money's worth because Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes gives me soothing comfort that lasts up to 8 hours. Why does it last so long? Because it stays in your eyes, that's why. The soothing moisturizers in Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes are specially formulated to stay put. They're the no-drip drops. For up to 8 hours of soothing comfort, get Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. Use as directed.
How do you know your dog is healthy? IAMS knows the signs. Aw, good boy. Which is why IAMS Proactive Health helps promote 7 signs of healthy vitality. Healthy bones, muscles, heart, digestion, teeth, immune system, and a shiny coat. Phew, say that 3 times. Plus, IAMS is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Try IAMS for 4 weeks, and if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. For more information and a $5 coupon, visit IAMS.com.
From Bakersfield, California to Spokane, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. And before we go back to discussion, I do want to just take a moment to thank you, wherever you're listening, on some of America's great radio stations or on XM Satellite Radio or Sirius Satellite Radio. We've added both XM and Sirius to the Beyond the Beltway network of stations, both satellite and terrestrial, that every Sunday night offers an opportunity for people all over the country to offer their thoughts and opinions and sharing them with people from that you normally don't see on at least the network shows that originate here in the city of Chicago. So we thank you very much for being part of your Sunday night listening, hopefully, pleasure, whether it's on radio or also on our flagship television station, WYCC, and Comcast Cable in the Chicagoland area. And although, as I've always said, this is a national show, and I usually get a little upset if we start to dally and bring up too much Illinois politics to share with the national audience. At this moment, a local story in Illinois is also a national story following the arrest of Governor Rod Blagojevich and the arrest of his chief of staff, John Harris, recently. And I want to get reaction from everyone around the table because you did not list him as one of the big losers of the year.
No.
But from a political standpoint, this is a... He's way up there on that list, is he not?
Yeah, well, for Illinois Democrats, it's the best of times and the worst of times. You know, it's incredibly exciting to elect an Illinois Democrat president and then get a knock on the door of our other Democratic governor who's now arrested, right? He is one of the biggest losers of the year. I would say second to President George Bush, who I think is the biggest political loser of the year. But, you know, it's
is he a bigger loser this year than he was last year?
I think so.
And in your view, hasn't he been the loser of the year for 7 years in a row now?
Well, no. I mean, he was riding high, certainly. He won re-election in 2004, so it's tough to call him a loser then. But, you know, he's the least popular president since anyone's been doing polling.
Would you throw a shoe at him if he was in the
right.
Or two?
I don't really get that tradition, actually. It's never been part of my cultural background. Yeah. Maybe I'd give it a shot.
He apologized, by the way.
Did he?
Yeah. The individual, the journalist who threw
it. He apologized because he didn't hit him.
He apologized because he wants to get out of jail. You want to be in Iraqi jail? Can you imagine what that's like?
Yeah. Right.
I think, you know, common sense is the biggest loser this year because for a couple of reasons. The world as we know it makes no sense to me anymore. A terrorist like Bill Ayers is a tenured, celebrated now professor at University of Illinois Chicago and a Nobel Prize-winning economist who changed one of the most important thinkers of the 20th century is being protested at the University of Chicago, talking about Milton Friedman and the institute they're building in his honor. So to me, everything is kind of upside down, and the biggest loser is common sense and free markets, not because those ideas are wrong, because both parties, to your point about George Bush, abandoned those fundamental principles.
Well, to those listening around the country, I want to get your sense, Dan, because in your current position with the Heartland Institute and formerly with City and State Magazine and many years as the business editor of the Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Daily News and Crane Chicago Business, you have one of the most, you know, respected careers in journalism of anyone that's certainly has ever been on this program and works in the city of Chicago. To answer a question that I'm asked all the time, what is it about Chicago that we tolerate so much corruption and in other states, Rod Blagojevich, the pressure from the public would already have had him out of office, and he's not out of office yet, and not likely to be out. He's not going to leave of his own volition.
I presume, Bruce, you've received calls from your many friends outside of Illinois with giving you a horse laugh and making fun of Illinois. I have. I think, haven't we all?
Yes.
I have no answer for them. I don't know what to do. Right across the Wabash River is one of the finest governors in all of America, Mitch Daniels. He's got a balanced budget. He's got a rainy day fund. There's no taint of scandal. Everything's going along great. Minnesota wouldn't tolerate this kind of stuff. Something squirrely is going on in that election,
right,
Dan, the Senate election. But Minnesota, Wisconsin, no. What is it? Bruce, I just don't know.
But I think there's
an entirely different wing of Illinois politics. And remember, part of the reason why he got tagged is because the coming law, effective January 1st, which banned that unethical and now illegal activity to shake down contributors, you know, the vice of responsible governance was coming for him. So there's a set of people in a wing that tolerate or revel in corruption, but there's a growing wing that is reforming that and cutting it off. And I think it's important to remember that other Adlai Stevenson, Abner Mitfa, and Barack Obama wing of reform and good government, you know, that's why Rod was shaking down people so aggressively, because he only had 3 more weeks to do it under the law.
Well, but the Barack Obama wing, huh? the same guy that got the sweetheart deal from Tony Resco. I think this is cyclical. But I mean, I think there's deep roots in this city, in particular the city of Chicago, with political corruption. And it used to be people accepted kind of a 10% corruption tax. That was just the cost of
that's exactly
of
what they say in Indiana, Dan.
But now the corruption tax is more like 50 or 60% or higher. I mean, it's hard to calculate. But I mean, you know, this is not something that just happened over the last even two governors, one sitting in federal prison and the other one on his way there. This is something that's been going on literally for generations in this city.
What, in your view, the brazenness and the bravado of what he said on tapes? Again, can anybody explain that? Does anybody have even a wild suggestion as to why somebody would do that when he had to know? He's not a dumb man.
Just a mental illness, Bruce. For him to talk about, I'm going to run for president in two years, knowing he was being taped, and God help us, I have no idea.
I mean, people, you know, legislators that deal with him, the reason they use words privately like insane, you know, publicly like a madman, you know, delusional, you know, the fact is the guy has delusional qualities. I mean, to talk about running for president in 2016 is delusional.
It is likely to be within the next several weeks or months, as the impeachment proceeding proceedings move on and there will be a trial in the Illinois State Senate. There will be a resolution to this issue.
Yep.
If it is resolved and Ron Blagojevich is removed from office through that process, the Lieutenant Governor, Patrick Quinn, will emerge as the new governor of Illinois. Dan, let me start with this with you, Dan Miller. What can you share with, based on your knowledge, what can you share with the national audience about who Pat Quinn is and how different he is from Ron Blagojevich?
He's quite different. He's a divorced, now single father, raised in or educated in a seminary. He's got very, very strong traditional Catholic views, except on some key issues like abortion. He is absolutely straightforward. He's also a demagogue, a populist, and a guy who has made his career by having Sunday afternoon press conferences when news was not coming out, and the TV and radio and especially the newspapers
would flock to his,
very media savvy. A very interesting guy, articulate, extremely intelligent.
Dan Johnson Weinberger.
He's absolutely clean as the day is long. He's part of that tradition of reform politics in Illinois by a populist. He's somebody that's worked to lower utility rates with the Citizens Utility Board. He's had a long time advocate for greater democracy. He was one of the leading champions to have a recall amendment, which the Tribune and a lot of Republicans supported as well. So he's a guy that believes in empowering people. He's a big believer in small-D democracy, and I think he's going to be a phenomenal improvement over our current governor.
He's a populist governor who, if he makes the Senate appointment, that will be the apex of his political career, and then he will quickly recede to his normal status, which is that of being irrelevant. He is not going to be governor after 2010. So this is somebody who is a caretaker. He's kind of a gadfly. And the only relevance he has and the only interesting thing about him in terms of his political future is the potential of making the Senate appointment.
Suppose he appoints himself, though. Suppose he appoints himself to the Senate.
He wouldn't do that.
No.
He'll be a caretaker of that U.S. Senate seat for a year and a half before he gets defeated.
In your view, again, explain to the audience why you think he would even renominated by the Democratic Party, which is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, I mean, there's no chance of that, especially, I mean, part of it is the landscape and part of it is just, like I said, he's always been kind of a gadfly to the party. He to the Democrat Party is kind of what John McCain was to the Republican Party, somebody that is a Democrat but is not exactly embraced by a lot of the establishment portions of the
but
party.
Isn't that exactly the type of person that the public might be looking for now? Someone who may not be popular with the rest of the, with the rest of the club. But again, if he's a straight arrow and he's just in certainly some of the attributes that you suggested, even a demagogue. I mean, there were those that thought initially he was a demagogue on the issue of showing up for the funerals of a fallen, soldiers from Iraq. And yet, I don't think there are too many in Illinois that he had missed. He's really made that.
No, that's not what I was referring to. Me neither.
But here's the problem.
He's made mistakes. I mean, not every idea he's had has been a good one, like the reduction of the size of the
Illinois. Well, that I wanted to talk about. That's sort of how I got my start.
Yeah, that's your start. Explain that to the people listening around the country.
Well, his biggest mistake is that we used to have a system in Illinois that had bipartisan representation. The idea is if you only elect one state representative or one member of Congress, which is what we do, and if your party loses, well, you're kind of out of luck, and you're not really represented in that body. Illinois was different. We used to have three people elected from a district, two from the majority party, one from the minority party. So everybody felt they had some direct representation. Pat sort of began his political career by getting rid of that cumulative voting system of three-member districts, moving to what we have now, which is single-member districts, where the minority party just doesn't get a voice in the House of Representatives.
And the reason he wanted to do that was to save taxpayers' money, as it turned out, it didn't save a lot of money.
Not at all, because at the same time, you reduced the actual number of state reps that were elected from 177 to 118, which is why it was called the Cutback Amendment. So that's why he got the reputation as being a demagogue, because everybody knew you weren't going to save any money, and cutback was just a popular thing to say. It's a bad decision for the state of Illinois, because it'd be healthy to have bipartisan representation in every district.
I want to talk more about national politics and things that are going to be happening in the year ahead when we come back. Thank you very much for joining us for this recorded edition, the last broadcast of 2008 of Beyond the Beltway, coming to you tonight from our home base at the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side.
You know, I always appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile. And that's why I love those folks who make Clear Eyes eye drops. They put an extra moisturizing ingredient in every Clear Eyes product in the entire line, even their redness formula.
And I get up to 8 hours of soothing comfort. An extra moisturizer and up to 8 hours of soothing comfort? Thank you, Clear Eyes people, wherever you are. Use as directed.
Reason number 48 to switch to Geico.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge a premium to your credit card. It's easy and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
From Santa Cruz, California to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. I want to spend a few moments talking about the news media. We briefly referenced the news media and how they handled Sarah Palin when she entered the vice presidential sweepstakes. But generally speaking, insofar as the news business and the way in which the news media covered this campaign of 2008, what grade would you give them, Dan Johnson Weinberger?
Well, I'm sure my Republican friends think I'm, you know, biased.
No, not you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd say I thought it was fine. I mean, I guess the shift is towards more new media, and I'm not sure how newspapers survive. But I think the news media business, I think, is becoming less relevant every decade we go, and they're becoming less of the sort of high priests of American democracy. And I didn't see them as nearly a big a player in this election season as I think a lot of Republicans did.
Dan Prof.
I kind of agree with that last part, but you asked for a grade. Is there a lower grade than F?
No.
No, that's it. Then I would give them an F. I found it interesting.
Who's the worst of the worst?
Oh, man.
The worst media in the world.
Yeah, I'd probably.
By the way, that
MSNBC generally, maybe Keith Olbermann specifically.
I would say that their convention coverage was an all time low.
Oh yeah. Oh, without question. The only highlight of that their entire campaign coverage was Matthews and Olbermann spatting on air like a couple of kids in a sandbox. But the interesting thing was, and just to highlight, you know, that this whole idea of media bias is not some Republican manufactured dream or nightmare. So what Jay Carney from Time goes to be Joe Biden's spokesman, right? Right. A friend of mine emailed me when that appointment was made or when that hire was made. He said the first thing Jay Carney should do is demand back pay. That's exactly right.
It was somebody on this program, Bruce, who said, another guest, I can't remember who it was, but he said as he walked through the newsstand at the airport, he felt that he was walking through a Barack Obama campaign office. All the magazines had his face on it. And this was before he was elected. This was in the leading.
Can I share one story from a friend of mine who was at Grand Park for the big night, the election night for Obama's speech. She was there covering it for the outlet she works for. She said literally there were four or five reporters from outlets, you know, legitimate outlets, that were weeping, right? So you tell me about objectivity. Tell me about, you know, kind of a professional news person weeping when it was announced that Obama had won the presidency. And tell me that these were people that were objectively covering this race.
So what?
Talking about the coverage of the race, let us talk about, again, no one has mentioned it. This is part of one of the low points of the year. Let's talk about Reverend Wright. Let's talk about the part of this campaign when there was some concern about whether the bloom was off the rose insofar as the Obama campaign is concerned. Let me ask this question to you, Dan. Did the Chicago media really screw up? Because this became a national story and the story was really broken by reporters beyond Chicago that maybe should have known and informed the rest of the country about Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
As a longtime journalist in this city, Bruce, you know that there is no bigger divisive issue than race. That is far and away the biggest thing. And if you are on the wrong side of that issue, you could be shut down with a boycott or any number of things that have happened. Jesse Jackson routinely, but he would lead boycotts against this paper or that paper.
it's deadly to get on that issue. So once Reverend Wright emerged as an issue, the Chicago media would have nothing to do with it because they know it would be offensive to African Americans and the game could be up. Both newspapers are in touch.
I want to just follow up on that point because I think it's a very important point about how certain that newspapers and television stations, they make editorial decisions for fear of a business response. In looking at the Chicago Tribune as it relates to the controversy involving Rod Blagojevich and a pending decision by the state to assist Sam Zell and the Chicago Tribune Company in the selling of Wrigley Field.
Rehabilitating, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where do you come down on when newspaper or media organizations have business deals that are going through the state government? Where do you come down on that?
It's inevitable, Bruce, and I come down on it that is perfectly all right. I would not like to see it, but it certainly isn't an actionable event. And given the need for capital, given the need for a broad base to support the news operation, it's inevitable that businesses that produce newspapers are also going to be developers.
I think you've got to give the Trib some credit on this one. I mean, you had a governor willing to throw $100 million of corporate welfare at this, you know, hyper-leveraged company, desperately in need of capital, you know, a classic corporate welfare scheme. You had an editorial board that remains on a crusade to get Rod Blagojevich's scalp. And somehow, if you believe the editorial board writers, they never heard about the extreme pressure put on the financial guys with their hands out looking for the corporate welfare. The guys that were running the crusade against the governor never heard about it. That's got to give you a little bit of hope, I think.
Dan Prep, do you see it that way?
Well, I mean, that might be a little bit of a sanitized version of it, I think. But I do think that what Dan Miller said, that there is some inevitability about some of these dealings with huge media enterprises like the Tribune Company. And I don't have a particular problem with it, except I'm not a corporate welfare fan, that's for sure. But I don't have a problem with the idea of those type of transactions from an ethical point of view, as long as it's in the sunlight, as long as full disclosure.
On that note, we are out of time. Dan Prop, thank you very much for joining us. Not only tonight, but throughout the year. You'll be back in the next hour for those listening to us on radio. Dan Johnson Weinberger, we thank you very much. Our Democrat, he too will be back for hour number two for those of you who are listening to this broadcast on the radio. And Dan Miller, you have another appointment that you've got to move on to. So thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with our television audience on this, our last broadcast of 2008. If you're watching us on television, we thank you very much for watching us tonight and throughout the year. If you're listening to us on radio, some of America's great radio stations, and Sirius XM Radio, stay right where you are. We have another full hour. And in the next hour, we're going to be continuing our discussion with Dan Proft and Dan Johnson Weinberger, and we'll be joined by some of America's great radio talk show hosts, finding out how the major issues of the day are playing in their areas around the country. I'm Bruce Dumont. Happy New Year.
Lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about Chapstick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy, and it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new Chapstick True Shimmer? It's the only Chapstick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear Chapstick.
Jillian Miller, poet, laments her sinus pressure and congestion.
This stuffiness comes and stays. Weekdays, workdays, sinus pressure haze. Gone is my patience for completing a sentence or listening to friends. To them I make amends.
Everything seems harder when your sinuses are blocked. New Sudafed PE Day and Night Dual Pack gives you maximum strength relief of sinus pressure and congestion, day and night.
Oh, this grief has found Sudafed PE relief.
Sudafed PE Day and Night. Unblock your head. Use only as directed.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice, now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the hottest gift.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Every month, we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like GEICO's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. GEICO.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
You've got spam, in your email now.
The holiday season is here, and with it, the onslaught of email-based spam, viruses, spoofing, phishing, and spyware attacks. Keep your business safe this holiday season by installing a Barracuda Spam Firewall, the world's number one selling anti-spam solution. With no software to install and no per-user fees, it's the simplest, most cost-effective way to stop dreaded holiday spam. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now for your free trial, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go to Barracuda.com.
Are you worried about your job? If you were laid off, would you lose your car, your home? How are you going to pay your bills? WageProtection.com can be your answer. It pays up to $1,500 per month in cash if your salary stops. For more information, visit us at WageProtection.com or call 1-888-345-4657. That's 1-888-345-4657. Hurry, sign up at WageProtection.com and be protected today.
From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and in this hour, Kenny Rahmeyer of KLBJ Radio in Austin, Texas, Mark Carbonaro of KOIN Radio in Salinas, California, and Kurt Smith of WXXI Radio in Rochester, New York. Our program tonight coming to you from the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side. This program is recorded tonight. It is our last broadcast of 2008. And one of the things that we were able to do this year in covering the rock'em sock'em world of Democratic primary politics as well as Republican primary politics, we were able to take the show on the road a number of times. And one of our stops was in the great state of Texas, and we were able to stop by our affiliate down there, KLBJ Radio, one of the great radio stations in America. And we had the pleasure of meeting Kenny Rahmeyer, who has been holding down weekends on Saturday and Sunday nights for a long, long time down there. And we welcome Kenny to be on the Beltway. Kenny, nice to have you with us.
Bruce, thank you. Great to talk with you again.
As you look at the year, a lot of stories, a lot of names, dates, places. What were the two or three things that stand out in your mind that were the most significant stories nationally as they played out in Austin, Texas?
Well, certainly the election and, you know, the debate between Hillary Clinton, Obama, and the other candidates really brought that into focus for us here in Austin. But that's, everybody's talked about that, I'm sure. I would say along with the election, a lot of disappointment in our current president. As you know, this was a popular governor here in the state of Texas for quite some time, then Governor Bush, now President Bush. And over the course of the last 8 years or so, I have to say amongst our listeners and a lot of his strong supporters, definitely some disappointment, not on the national security side so much, but just as the economic events have unfolded here as of late, and some of the moves made by President Bush in the closing days of his presidency have not made a lot of our listeners very happy, Bruce.
You know, we were discussing in hour number one about the role of the news media in the campaign, but I want to get a sense from everybody, and I'll get Dan Proft to give an opportunity to offer his sense. It seems to me that with the debates, both in the Republican and Democratic primaries, for any voter to say that they didn't know where voters stood, I mean, they had to be, totally spaced out, because it seems to me the debates provided a significant ongoing service throughout the whole campaign.
No, I think that's exactly right. And that's why, as poor as I think the mainstream media performed in terms of the objectivity or the substance of their coverage, I don't think that's what lost the race for McCain by any stretch of the imagination. McCain, as we've talked about in this show before, had several hours of unfiltered direct access to the American people, and he didn't make his case very strong. So I think that's an absolutely true point.
Dan Weinberger.
Yeah, I think we should have more debates. I think the debates were good. I guess I don't want to go too off topic, but I think McCain basically said, I'm more of the same on the economic policies. There really wasn't much daylight between him and President Bush, and I think the voters, our radio host mentioned, they were pretty disappointed with the president.
Kenny, where was the beginning of the end for Hillary Clinton in your view?
The beginning of the end? Boy, that's hard to say. Obama made such a strong showing here. Of course, here in Austin, we are a blue dot in a red state. So I would have to say, though, she was competitive, certainly, you know, close to the end, but I it's hard for me to put my finger on it. If I could come back and echo just some of the sentiment on the media fawning, I have to tell you, Bruce, there's a lot of disenchantment with the media that built as the election went along. And, in fact, it's even carried over now to the extent that a lot of our listeners, I think, are questioning whether the conventional media is going to challenge the Obama administration on anything going forward. This Blagojevich situation, they're kind of getting a pass there to a certain extent, and I think a lot of listeners have a concern that this is going to carry over and the Obama's administration is really going to just get more of the same that we've seen over the last several months from the conventional media, and they're not happy with that.
Of all the issues that you dealt with this past year, obviously the campaign probably took up the most amount of time. But insofar as the intensity of the people that called you on KLBJ, how did that measure against the auto bailout or the federal bailouts of Wall Street and AIG?
I'll tell you one that I think was the most interesting. If you go back early in the year, Bruce, it was immigration. You know, we had high school kids bailing out of class, going to these protests and that in downtown Austin. And then what happens when the campaign comes around and the debates in earnest and all that? Immigration was not raised one time in any of the debates, and that was a huge disappointment to, I think, Texans and I think the country at large. If you look at how emotional that issue was early in the year, and it literally dropped off the table as we got into the fall and the real close to crunch time.
What's your answer to the question why? Because you're absolutely right. It's the issue that every talk show host loves because it makes the phones ring, but yet it doesn't measure on election day.
Yeah, and it was such an emotional issue. You just have to think people down here, Bruce, were reading into that obviously, whether it was Obama or McCain, no one wanted to alienate that Hispanic vote, and they just didn't want to go there. And, of course, the events of the day, the economy and so forth, lended itself to it sort of got pushed to the back burner. But, again, I'm trying to answer your question, and you look at a hot topic early on this year that should have carried over into the elections but did not. It had to be immigration.
And also I think we would acknowledge, I want to get Dan's response, Dan Propp's response, is that Tom Tancredo, who really had made that his issue, he entered the primaries, but he was a Johnny One Note, and he didn't really – handle even his own issue very well.
No, he didn't. I think that probably helped to usher that to the back of the discussion. But also the reality is that McCain and Obama substantively were not that far apart in terms of comprehensive immigration reform, and so there wasn't a lot to talk about. In addition to the fact that both parties were trying to court that all-important Latino vote in swing states.
Getting to what extent?
I'll just jump in.
Go ahead.
I'll just say our governor tried to. I call it Operation Candid Camera. He tried to put a bunch of cameras down on the border. We're a border state. That's a huge issue in this state, and it was a big disappointment. That what he just said a moment ago is true. McCain and Obama were close on their positions, but it was a frustration, given all that we've dealt with here in Austin, that didn't bubble up and get more attention.
Well, I'm not I'm not expecting much improvement now that the governor of Arizona, Napolitano, is going to be the head of Homeland Security. She didn't do a great job of protecting her own borders. I'm not so sure how she's going to do protecting the borders of other states that border Mexico.
I will say, I think, you know, they were somewhat tougher than most as far as employer sanctions and so forth, Bruce, but you're right. It remains to be seen how things are going to go going forward.
Well, it sure seems like, you know, there's not much discussion about reform on immigration and that the, you know, crackdown on the border side kind of won the debate. I mean, from the perspective of somebody who'd like to have a you know, path to citizenship for 12 million or 10 million or 14 million people who are here, kind of seems like my side lost. And the, you know, get tough on the border side won.
Well, we'll see what happens, and we'll see with the new director of Homeland Security and a Justice Department and a new president-elect. Let's find out whether indeed that muscle that I think the American people are looking for from the federal government actually takes place in 2009. Kenny Rahmeyer, thank you very much for joining us. I enjoyed being with you in Texas, and I look forward to seeing you again in the not-too-distant future.
Bruce, thank you much. Welcome back anytime.
Thank you. That's Kenny Rahmeyer. He is with KLBJ Radio in Austin, Texas. When we come back, we're going to head west to Salinas, California, and hear from Mark Carbonaro.
Jillian Miller, poet, laments her sinus pressure and congestion.
This stuffiness comes and stays. Weekdays, workdays, sinus pressure haze. Gone is my patience for completing a sentence or listening to friends. To them I make amends.
Everything seems harder when your sinuses are blocked. New Sudafed PE Day and Night Dual Pack gives you maximum strength relief of sinus pressure and congestion, day and night.
Oh, this grief has found Sudafed PE relief.
Sudafed PE Day and Night. Unblock your head. Use only as directed.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
From Youngstown, Ohio to Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to this recorded edition, year-end edition of Beyond the Beltway. This is our last hour of 2008, and we're touching base right now with some of America's great talk show hosts, and we're heading west to KOIN Radio in Salinas, California, where the morning man, Mark Carbonaro, joins us along with Jim. It's the Mark and Jim Show, also the program director. Mark, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Hey, Bruce, thank you very much for the invite, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you. A question about the issues that we have not yet touched on, but, you know, one of the big issues late in the year was Prop 8 out there and the reaction to the gay and lesbian community after they lost a big vote. What has been the reaction to people that, you know, call your program to that issue, and what is likely to happen next in that issue of gay marriage in the state of California?
Well, you know, let me first say this. I think that ultimately what's going to end up here is that it's going to be approved, and at some point down the line, gay marriage will be allowed in California. But, you know, right now, I think it's still very much an issue that's open to debate. In March, it'll be going before judges in California. Lawsuits have been filed by the No on Prop 8 side. Now, that was the essentially the gay and lesbian community and their supporters to invalidate Proposition 8, which passed by about 4% of the vote, 52% to 48%. So in March, that'll be going before a panel of judges in the state Supreme Court, and we'll see where it goes there. They're effectively attempting to have Proposition 8 invalidated by the judges under the argument that it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the California State Constitution. So we'll see where that goes. I can tell you this much. If you want to get the phones ringing still, you know, there are two things you can always bring up and the phones will ring, and that is, you know, gay marriage, Prop 8, and illegal immigration. Those are two things on conservative talk radio that will bring, you know, the callers out of the woodwork. But, you know, Bruce, I think and I was talking with a friend of mine about this earlier today, a guy who really follows, you know, what's going on here in the state, that a lot of us feel that Prop 8 and the gay marriage issue is really pretty much a distraction from what's really the elephant in the room in California, and that is the financial meltdown of this state. You know, we have a $41 billion budget deficit. The state is going to be out of money by the middle of February. And we have a state budget deficit that, if this thing isn't fixed, will grow to $60 billion next year. And that's really an issue. You know, the thing with gay marriage, Bruce, is that it's an issue that a few people care a lot about, and a lot of people in California, I think, it's not as big a deal to them. But the one thing that will affect every person in this state is what happens in Sacramento with our state budget. And that has
take us inside, some of the options. I mean, first of all, what about increased, taxation? Where will that road lead?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because just yesterday the Democratic majority in California in the legislature and the Senate came up with a budget plan that it will raise lots of taxes in California. What they're attempting to do is to raise taxes but call them fee increases, because they're saying that they're net revenue neutral by eliminating some taxes and replacing them with fees. What they're hoping is to get these through a court of law by calling them fee increases and not tax increases. Now, in the California State Constitution, because of Prop 13 that we passed back in June of 78, you need a two-thirds majority vote in both houses of the state legislature to pass a budget. We have a bicameral legislature here with an assembly and a Senate. And the state Senate has enough Republicans to block that two-thirds vote by the Democrats. So that's where we are right now. Present budget proposals that have come up that would have raised taxes.
What is, for those listening around the country, and again, we're talking to Mark Carbonaro. He is with KION Radio in Salinas, California. Also, the program director does the morning show. But people listening around the country, when they hear about California, if it isn't about the gay rights Prop 8, they hear about your governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They know that he was swept into office and was immensely popular. His numbers are now, way, way down. What is his political future look like, because he can't succeed himself as governor?
That's right. He is looking at what we hear, the smart money, is that he's going to run for Dianne Feinstein's seat in 2010 in the United States Senate. He would like to be the next United States Senator from California.
Hmm. And how likely, but at the moment he's pretty unpopular, correct?
It's interesting. There are still some people that like the governor. Right now it seems that more Democrats like the governor than Republicans. And it is bipartisan support that swept that governor into office in 2005 and then reelected him back a couple of years later. So Arnold does have the opportunity to get there. But what happens with this budget will make or break this governor and his legacy.
Dan Johnson Weinberger's got a comment for you, Mark.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons some Democrats like him is, he was a big leader in passing Proposition 1A, which is California's high-speed rail bond, where you're going to build the first modern high-speed rail system in the nation, 220 miles per hour electric, grade separated, between L.A. and San Francisco. Could you talk a little bit about how that debate for really, modern high-speed rail for the first time has gone after the victory in November?
Well, there wasn't any debate about it. That's the interesting thing. Because of Prop 8 on the November ballot, that's what all the debate was about. Really, there was very little debate in California about whether or not we would have a high-speed rail system or we would fund this. And it just swept through to victory on November 4th. Now I think the tough thing is going to be, in this financial environment, is whether or not we can pay for this thing and how it's going to be paid for.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Dan Prepp.
Well, I was actually going to switch gears a little bit. Hilda Solis, congressman, was nominated to be Obama's labor secretary, and just kind of wanted to get a little bit of background on her for the nation and what some of her issues were and what kind of labor secretary.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to have to plead a little bit of ignorance on her, because we have 53 congresspeople from California, and she's 400 miles south of us in Southern California. I can tell you about Sam Farr up here in our district and some of the local congressmen, but I don't have a lot of experience in because I've never had to deal with Hilda Solis. And
now, Mark, you were telling me that one of the things that the congressman is dealing with is he's getting a lot of questions. A lot of the people that listen to you on KION, they are very, very upset with the government bailouts, the automobile bailouts, and they want to know where their bailout is.
That's right, Bruce. Thanks for mentioning that. There was a story in our local paper today. We had a number of people who were involved in a private, you know, a hard money investment fund of second deeds of trust. And the fellow who managed this fund, apparently, either it's up to some, controversy now whether he actually stole the money or just poorly invested it, but it's essentially all gone. And so now these people who were involved in risky investments to begin with are saying that they didn't realize how risky these investments could be, and they're saying, where's our bailout, and what can you do to get us some money?
Is the, you know, we've been talking in hour number one about the enthusiasm and the euphoria following the Obama election. How did that election play in Salinas, in Santa Cruz, in Monterey, California, and to what extent is the popularity of the president sky high at the moment, or the president-elect?
Oh, I'd say he's extremely popular here. This is a coastal California, for the most part, with maybe the exception of San Diego, because it's a big military town, is very, very blue, very Democrat, and you have large majorities of registered Democrat voters and independents that lean Democrat. So in our area, Monterey, Santa Cruz, up and down the coast of California, Obama extremely popular. Now, he took 60%, more than 60% of the vote in California on November 4th. So there is great anticipation among Democrats in California, and particularly on the coast, that they're going to, you know, see a lot of things that they want from a president for the next few years.
Dan Kraft.
We talked a little bit about Schwarzenegger, and he's got to find a new office in 2010. Who are some of the likely front runners for governor to replace Schwarzenegger?
Well, on the Republican side, Steve Poizner is currently the insurance commissioner of California, and he has got an exploratory committee. He will be the most formidable Republican candidate. There's some talk that Tom McClintock, who just won election to John Doolittle's old seat in the Congressional District 4, may even think about running for governor again, although I tend to think that's not very likely. On the Democratic side, you've got John Garamendi in California, and he is, our state treasurer. He is going to run. Also, Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, fancies himself as a candidate for governor, as does Antonio Villaraigosa, who's the mayor of Los Angeles.
Would either of them, that you are not in one of the big, large two cities in the state, would either of those candidates run well in Salinas, California, and Santa Cruz and Monterey?
You know, I'd say that that Villaraigosa would connect with the large Latino population in this area. Gavin Newsom would connect with the political progressives on the left. But I think when it's said and done, I believe that it's going to be John Garamendi. And then Jerry Brown is talking about throwing his hat in the ring again as well. He's the state's attorney general, and he may take a flyer at being governor.
Can't get rid of that guy. Cannot get rid of that guy.
You know why? You know why you can't get rid of him? Because people keep electing him.
No,
they? There must be. You know, yeah. We may not see it from afar, but you know, the people in California seem to like Jerry Brown because they keep electing him to a variety of offices. Again, not only now the attorney general, the former mayor of Oakland, and the former two-term governor of that state, and a many-time candidate for president of the United States. Mark Carbonaro, thank you very much for offering your insights into how the political pulse of America is playing out in Salinas, California. The program director of KION, we thank you very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So, are you going to slip on ChapStick Moisturizer? It's made of 10 moisturizers, so it feels light and smooth and ultra hydrating. Or there's something completely new for you to put on. It's new ChapStick True Shimmer with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick. Use as directed.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice, now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the hottest gift.
From Boise, Idaho to Sugarland, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations. Joining us tonight, our liberal Democrat is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is a graduate of the University of Illinois and also the University of Chicago Law School. He's an attorney. He's a progressive lobbyist,
yep.
Head of your own firm, and you try to get all things left of center on the books.
And my latest boomlet is the interest in Barack Obama's professorial career. He was my teacher, so I've been getting a nice little run. It's been fun. I'm getting a little run of press to say what he was like as a professor.
What was he like? Let's tell our audience.
Well, he was, among the most intelligent professors I've ever had. And what
does given you a good grade?
He did. He did. I earned that A. I earned it. But he was. What doesn't come across is he was very generous with his time. You know, he was very kind. He was working three jobs at the time. You know, state senator and working at a law firm and teaching law at the university. But he still would always take time for any student that wanted to talk to him. And a lot of professors were, you know, not as generous with their time.
A follow-up question. The expectation of Barack Obama is very, very high. As someone who was once his student,
yep.
And certainly agrees with his political philosophy, what are your concerns about the president-elect?
My biggest concern is that Washington can be a very slow and soul-deadening place for progressive ideas. And I think the time comes from bold modernization. So, for example, we need a real shift from the way we pay for health care in this country and the way we deliver health care. And my fear is that we'll get sort of bogged down and, well, maybe we'll tackle that next year or it's too much on our plate. The wisdom of Washingtonians is don't do too much when I think the opposite is true. This is the year to do it all. And I hope Barack keeps his bold, audacious vision for change in this country.
Yeah, like Don King.
Dan Proft also joins us. Dan Proft is a Republican operative. He is a spokesman for the Village of Cicero. And also, he is a political commentator on our flagship station, WLS Radio, appearing with Don Wade and Roma in the morning. And a frequent guest, as is Dan Johnson Weinberger, representing their differing political philosophies. And joining us now from his home in New York is the ever-popular Kurt Smith. He is a longtime radio talk show host on WXXI in Rochester. He hosts a program called Perspectives. He is a former speechwriter to President George Herbert Walker Bush and a professor of English at the University of Rochester. Kurt, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Well, Bruce, my pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
As you look at this past year, obviously, we have spent a great deal of time talking about the election, but in your view, was there a defining moment that either propelled Barack Obama to the presidency, derailed John McCain and pushed him away from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, or is there another issue that you think is more important than either of the campaigns for president?
Well, the most ubiquitous issue is the Banquo's ghost, the 800-pound albatross by the name of George W. Bush. That was the entire shroud, if you would, over this campaign. It made the election of any Republican almost metaphysically impossible. I do think Obama ran a near flawless campaign. He's to be congratulated for that. If he were a book, it would be Great Expectations. I personally think that many of them will be achieved. I think that his Gallup opinion ratings are not exaggerated. I think there is a bipartisan hope that he will succeed. John McCain ran a very dysfunctional campaign. How could it be otherwise? Like George W. Bush, he has no affinity, no empathy, whatever, with the average middle-class, middle American who forms the very base in the heart of the Republican Party. Having said all of that, misgivings, I think, about Obama were pronounced enough that had the economic meltdown not occurred in September, and moreover, had McCain not reacted to that meltdown with an even greater meltdown of his own, I think John McCain may well have been the president-elect of the United States.
I want to get reaction from everybody, starting with Dan Proft. For a portion of this campaign in the wake of the Jeremiah Wright issue early in the primary or midway through the primary season, there were periodic discussions of race in America. Barack Obama had a very high visibility speech on race in Philadelphia in the wake of the national stories revealing some of the more firebrand rhetoric of Reverend Wright. But now that we've had a presidential campaign and we have a president-elect who's African-American, what has it done for race relations in this country, if anything?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that there's. I mean, I think one of the problems is, you know, by what metric do you measure that? I mean, I think that's a hard thing to measure. I don't know that there's been any kind of clear and convincing evidence of a new racial of racial healing or a new racial togetherness. I think, as we've talked about in the show before, I think there's opportunity there going forward, but I don't think that is congealed itself.
But there was
yet.
There were a number of stories after Barack Obama was elected. There were inappropriate things said in schools, talking about, you know, assassinations. There were stories of gun sales going up, racial right. epithets being written. There were a number of not so pleasant stories that were written in the wake of that election. Have you experienced any of those feelings in any conversations or in your walk of life?
No, I mean, I'll tell you. I mean, you know, have I gotten a few off-color emails sent to me and things like that? Sure. You know, the stuff goes around. People make jokes about all kinds of physical characteristics of anybody, especially if they don't like the person that was elected for whatever reason. But I think the election of Barack Obama in and of itself is a signal about the state of race in America, and that it is not as pronounced as some of those race-oriented politicians would want to make it.
Dan Weinberger.
I think that part of the reason why older African Americans were crying and younger African Americans were excited is because I don't think a black man could have won 20 years ago. And I think for older African Americans, the realization that a white country would elect a black leader, and we're the first Western democracy to do it, by the way, was inconceivable. And it shows that the world that people maybe over 50, 55, 60, that world is gone. And that the range of racial progress, the world really has changed. And it's not that Barack shows it. It's rather that Barack's election is a manifestation that attitudes really have shifted
right.
in a positive
and
way.
And that the election wasn't about race. I mean, right. that wasn't part of the conversation.
Kurt, what is the perspective from Rochester?
Well, I don't know about the perspective from Rochester, but I can give you mine. I think we've moved
That's
beyond
good
race. I don't think the elite media understands that. I think much of it is still obsessed by race. But I think the American voter is light years ahead of the national press. I think the best testament was Election Day. This election was not about race. It could be, however, about ideology and philosophy, which I think matter far more than race and should. I think Obama is, in a sense, in a very enviable position. He controls, at least to some extent, his own destiny. I think how he acts, the kind of judicial appointees that he makes, the kind of philosophy that he espouses, will determine whether, in fact, he is able to achieve some consensus this year in 2009 or not. For example, the best thing I think that he could do is what he's given hint of already. Revise affirmative action. Make it not race-based, but rather economic-based. One of your guests mentioned that he had three jobs at one time. I had four jobs to get through school. We have a lot of company, tens of millions of Americans, and I think most Americans believe that if affirmative action exists, it should be based upon your need, not upon the color of your skin.
I would also like to get a sense from you, based on something we discussed earlier in the program, and that is whether or not there is a true comparison between Barack Obama and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Are the economic conditions of the country so similar to what they were back in Depression era 1932 that that's a serious discussion that we will be hearing more about, especially when we assess the first 100 days of the Obama administration?
The question for me?
Yes.
Well, no. I think economically there is no comparison. Yes, the country is in recession, and the meltdown hasn't occurred. The bailout has been a flop, but unemployment is 7 to 8%. Under Franklin Roosevelt, it was actually, who knew, when he took office. It might have been 22, it might have been 25, it might have been 30%. What we have here, however, I think are very strong parallels between the two in terms of their ability to communicate. You know, I think we felt, have come to feel, it was constitutionally forbidden to have a president who can speak. It's been a while now, hasn't it? 8 years. And there still is no substitute for what Theodore Roosevelt called the bully pulpit. Franklin Roosevelt utilized it. He almost became the bully pulpit. And Barack Obama is president today, above all other reasons, for the simple reason that he can speak. He can communicate. He can use everyday, workaday, parable, anecdotal rhetoric, much like Franklin Roosevelt, to establish affinity. We can see that already. I would be shocked if he didn't use many of the same devices on television that Roosevelt used on radio, beginning with, but not limited to, the fireside address.
Dan Weinberger.
I would say a parallel could be that FDR built a governing coalition for 30 or 40 years. Based upon his legislative accomplishments. We could do the same thing with health care if we pass universal health care of some kind, and we could see a lot more people joining unions if we pass the Employee Free Choice Act.
We're talking with Dan Proft, Dan Johnson Weinberger, and from his home in Rochester, New York, Kurt Smith of WXXI, one of America's great talk show hosts. I'm Bruce Dumont. Tonight you're listening to a recorded edition, the last broadcast of 2008 of Beyond the Beltway from Chicago.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
How do you know your dog is healthy? IAMS knows the signs. Aw, good boy. Which is why IAMS Proactive Health helps promote 7 signs of healthy vitality. Healthy bones, muscles, heart, digestion, teeth, immune system, and a shiny coat. Phew, say that 3 times. Plus, IAMS is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Try IAMS for 4 weeks, and if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. For more information and a $5 coupon, visit IAMS.com.
From Sioux Falls, South Dakota to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And Dan Proft, you had a question for Kurt Smith, who joins us from Rochester, New York.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about the Republican missteps over the last year, last couple years. And as a messaging guy, communication professional, I just wonder, Kurt, what you think Republicans should do going forward in terms of their message and their policy agenda.
Well, the big gulf is not liberal and conservative. It's Wall Street versus Main Street. It's no coincidence that Republicans win 49 out of 50 states when they nominate someone who grew up in a lower middle class background, Richard Nixon, 72, Ronald Reagan, 84, someone who has an affinity with, who is a champion of lower taxes and spending and limited government and traditional values and American exceptionalism. The Bush administration has been the exact antithesis of this. And so, to some extent, has John McCain. So I think, basically, economic populism, respect for the little guy, respect for the role of religion in public life, these are all positions which have overwhelming majority support if you look at any poll from the American people. The Republicans' problem is Obama is reading the same poll results that we are. And I predict, and I believe, based upon, among other things, his choosing of Rick Warren, the televangelist, to lead the prayer in the inaugural address, Barack Obama is going directly at the base of the Republican Party, which is white evangelicals. If he can pluck off a percentage of them, then he has the chance to do what Franklin Roosevelt did for 40 years with the New Deal and Richard Nixon did for 40 years with the silent majority, to build a lasting and enduring majority. Obama can do that if he understands who he has to get and how.
That is part of your prediction. I also want to get, before we completely run out of time for our broadcast this year, Dan Johnson Weinberger, look into your crystal ball and see what predictions you would like to put on the table, either of a positive nature or a negative nature.
I'm going to predict that the economy gets worse before it gets better. I think the first 6 months of 2009 are going to be bad. I think the mortgage meltdowns are going to get worse. I don't think we're out of that mix. And I think the late 2009, I think we're going to have another massive public works stimulus package because economic conditions are going to deteriorate and not turn around.
And what about on the world scene?
On the world scene, I anticipate the economic meltdown around the world is going to dampen a lot of potential trouble zones. But I think our diplomacy is going to be deployed for the first time very aggressively, and I don't think we're going to see any minor or major wars.
Dan Proft.
Well, I'll make two predictions. One, that the Chicago White Sox will win the World Series in 2009.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, that's because I make that prediction every year. Yeah. And I was right in 2005, so it's not that long ago. And then the second, I agree with what Dan said, but I think it will trigger the opposite, which is I think it will foment terrorism and more terrorist attacks like we saw in Mumbai, because I think desperate times allow for extremists, which are Islamic fundamentalists, to kind of try and reassert themselves. So I see actually more problems on the world stage.
I agree with that, and I also agree with Joe Biden, and in that no matter who would have been elected, I think we're going to see a new president of the United States be tested. I think with an international incident of some kind, and I think Mumbai may be maybe just a signal. And I think, as I said a few weeks ago on this program, I still think that the country that is going to give the United States the most trouble in the next 3 to 5 years is going to be Pakistan. I think that continues to be a tinderbox. Look into your crystal ball, Kurt Smith. You can also, by the way, we should mention that Kurt Smith is one of the true historians of American baseball, so if you'd like to weigh in on Dan's prediction about the White Sox, now that we have a White Sox fan as president-elect of the United States,
right. I would like your comment. And I'm very happy that he's a fan of the Pale Hose. In fact, I'm just doing a couple essays for a book as we write on the 50th anniversary of the White Sox pennant of 59. However, equal time is in order. I predict that for the third time in 6 years, the Boston Red Sox will win the world title, making up for lost ground. No World Series before that since 1918. Barack Obama, I think, will throw out the first ball at the former Comiskey Park. The Red Sox will win the World Series. I think economically, I agree with the guests, it will get worse before it gets better. But if you're Barack Obama, you're very thankful for George W. Bush, because Bush has been such a calamity, and the problems are so intractable that Obama will be given, what, year and a half, 2 years, 3 years? He will always be able to say quite truthfully, I inherited these problems. So to Barack Obama, George W. Bush is and will remain the gift that keeps on giving. Abroad, I think that we're going to see a foreign policy much more realistic, much more in tune with American affinity and with American values than over the last 8 years. It's no coincidence, I think, that Obama has said the nicest things about which presidents in foreign policy over the last 40 years, Richard Nixon and George Herbert Walker Bush, my former boss. Why does that please me? Because they are arguably or unarguably the presidents during that time who knew the most about foreign policy. So I think the world will like us a lot better a year from now, and they will have every reason to.
And you're optimistic that the new Secretary of State will rise to the occasion and perform well on the world stage as well?
I think New York's loss or New York's gain is the nation's gain. I think she'll be a superb Secretary of State. She may have had to put the presidency in a rearview mirror, but there are a lot worse ways than to create a legacy than to be President and Secretary of State. And I think she will work, frankly, really hand in glove with the President-elect.
Kurt Smith, we thank you very much for joining us, talk show host for WXXI in Rochester, New York, also the political curator of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and a project that we worked on together, naming the 125 most memorable moments in the history of American politics. You can hear them and see them on our website, museum.tv. Kurt, always a pleasure to share microphones with you. Dan Proft has been with us. He is our Republican, and he is a commentator for Don Wade in the, and Roma in the mornings on our flagship station, WLS. And our Democrat liberal this evening and all this year has been Dan Johnson Weinberger. He started the year with a smile on his face. He still has the smile on his face. And speaking of smiles on their face, we have smiles on the face from Tom Veracruz, our longtime director of technical operations, and Fritz Goldman, who directs the show, and also Ben Stewart. And we thank them all. And, of course, Rita Veracruz, our biggest fan of all time. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for being with us tonight, this year. Good night and Happy New Year from Chicago.
Lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy, and it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
Jillian Miller, poet, laments her sinus pressure and congestion.
This stuffiness comes and stays. Weekdays, workdays, sinus pressure haze. Gone is my patience for completing a sentence or listening to friends. To them I make amends.
Everything seems harder when your sinuses are blocked. New Sudafed PE Day and Night Dual Pack gives you maximum strength relief of sinus pressure and congestion, day and night.
Oh, this grief has found Sudafed PE relief.
Sudafed PE Day and Night. Unblock your head. Use only as directed.
How do you know your dog is healthy? IAMS knows the signs. Aw, good boy. Which is why IAMS Proactive Health helps promote 7 signs of healthy vitality. Healthy bones, muscles, heart, digestion, teeth, immune system, and a shiny coat. Phew, say that 3 times. Plus, IAMS is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Try IAMS for 4 weeks, and if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. For more information and a $5 coupon, visit IAMS.com.
You've got spam, in your email now.
Whoa. The holiday season is here, and with it, the onslaught of email-based spam, viruses, spoofing, phishing, and spyware attacks. Keep your business safe this holiday season by installing a Barracuda Spam Firewall, the world's number one selling anti-spam solution. With no software to install and no per-user fees, it's the simplest, most cost-effective way to stop dreaded holiday spam. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now for your free trial, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go to Barracuda.com.
Are you worried about your job? If you were laid off, would you lose your car, your home? How are you going to pay your bills? WageProtection.com can be your answer. It pays up to $1,500 per month in cash if your salary stops. For more information, visit us at WageProtection.com or call 1-888-345-4657. That's 1-888-345-4657. Hurry, sign up at WageProtection.com and be protected today.